Campus FM presents the second annual JMER annual lecture. The Italian Job, the impact of input from the media on language learning. Delivered by Dr. Sandro Caruana.
On behalf of the Publications and Research Dissemination Committee of the Faculty of Education, I welcome you to the second annual JMER lecture. A few words about JMER. JMER stands for the Journal of Maltese Education Research. It is an initiative of the Committee for, as I said, Publications and Research Dissemination of the Faculty of Education. It's been in existence for the last 4 years. In fact, we're in volume 5 now, number 1. It is an electronic journal, and there are two issues. We publish two issues per year. The intention of JMER is to foreground, privilege, and highlight Maltese research. In fact, it's a showcase of Maltese-based research or research carried out by Maltese elsewhere. As I said, it is published twice yearly. It is fully refereed. In other words, each paper is reviewed by a local reviewer and an international reviewer. And so far we've reached volume 4, number 2. In all, we've published around 50 papers through JMER. JMER is not the only item in our agenda, research agenda. In fact, the infrastructure also consists of a monograph series called Trends, which is edited by Dr. Christopher Bezzina and Dr. Paul Patch. And there, obviously, we publish monographs. Here we publish, generally speaking, 28-page papers. It is edited by myself. Now, what I have to say about JMER is that it's not only a journal, but it's also a whole program, a series of happenings. And in fact, the annual JMER lecture is one of these happenings. Together with the annual JMER lecture, we also organize, and will be organizing for the first time this year, the JMER seminar. It's due in May. As the title says, it's the second annual JMER. We started this program of annual lectures last year. It was very, very successful, and therefore we organized it for this year too. This time round, we have Dr. Sandro Caruana, who is a colleague from the Department of Arts and Languages in Education within the Faculty of Education, and the title of his presentation today is The Italian Job, the Impact of the Media on Teaching and Learning Italian. So I now ask Dr. Caruana to introduce himself and obviously to introduce the lecture.
I'm supposed to be wired, okay, so I don't need that, am I? Well, introduce myself. I think most of you, I've had contact with either in the present or in the past, so basically, as you know, I'm a lecturer in the Faculty of Education. As you know, my specialization is Italian. Basically, I obtained a PhD from the University of Pavia some years back now in linguistics, and that is my main interest, so to say. But since it's also applied linguistics, I also lecture basically in teaching methodology. As far as the lecture goes today, I'll be starting off with a very brief presentation of some historical issues regarding the language regarding Italian language here in Malta. And then I'll proceed and go ahead till basically some issues regarding this day and age. The title is, well, The Italian Job, which obviously is a film, first and foremost. It's a 1969 film, which has, however, recently been redone, so most of you most probably might have watched it or might be familiar with it. Why did I choose this title? It's not really just because there's the word Italian, but it's also because, I mean, anybody who has watched this film knows that it's a story of twists and, well, and turnarounds and one thing and the other. And quite frankly, I believe that people who are involved in the teaching of Italian here in Malta over the past 20 years have been through a huge number of upheavals. I mean, the language in itself, namely because of a number of social constraints, right, not because of, the actual situation in schools, has had to change, and the students that we are facing today and who we are teaching Italian to today in local schools are very, very different to the students who, for example, I had faced when I had graduated from BEd in 1991, a long time ago now. It's a completely different kettle of fish. And the reason why I chose this title is precisely that, because we have been through a number of upheavals, as being in common, I mean, as a teacher of Italian at the end of the day, And I think, generally speaking, few subjects in our local schools have been through such a huge number of changes. So if we have to go a little bit back in time and actually, you know, start contextualizing Italian in Malta, if we have to go to the really distant past, we'd start off by saying that originally Italian, or the Tuscan variety, because in actual fact Italian was not really a language at the time, was a lingua franca for the knights in the past. Alongside English up to 1936, it was an official language here in Malta. And its importance diminished considerably after the language questions. I will not go into detail into these issues because they are historical issues. However, it is important to note that Italian here in Malta, at least in the past, definitely had a huge importance. Had a huge importance, first and foremost, because it was the language of the administration. It was the language of the church. It was the language of the courts. Okay? Obviously, because of the language question and because of the fact that, well, during the war, there was a huge conflict between the British and the Italians. No, Italian was practically levered out. And we came to a situation whereby practically in the post-war years, that is in the late 40s up to the 50s and the 60s, Italian here in Malta had a considerably less important role to play than it had before that. What happened then? Well, in recent times, of course, what happened was that Italian regained importance because of television. It's as simple as that. For example, just to go on to, you know, maybe anecdotes. A number of people here in Malta in the 60s used to meet to watch programs, Mike Bongiorno's quizzes, for example, in homes and all that. The popularity of Italian increased enormously. It reached its peak, I dare say, I'll speak about this later on, especially in the 70s and in the 80s, when, obviously, basically, Italian on TV practically had no competition, or very limited competition, no? Because basically, there was one Maltese channel, which was Television Malta, and then Italian channels, that is the Rai channels, and then, obviously, also the channels which came about because after 1976, no? This is my nice code switching, obviously, with Italian. Generally, after 1976, a number of local channels could also start transmitting nationwide. So, obviously, you got groups which eventually became Fininvest and Mediaset, so Canale 5, Italia 1. So, the popularity increased enormously. This happened mainly over the 70s and 80s. Now, if we have to take this a step forward and maybe go a little bit to the scientific side of this. In Malta, here in Malta, we have the ideal conditions to study the effects of linguistic input via the media. That is, we had a situation, and I'm using the past deliberately, we had a situation here in Malta, where there was one language which was transmitted through the media, Italian, which was not a language which was spoken in the society. Okay, because obviously here in Malta we speak in Maltese and in English, but Italian was present through the media, was present through television, but was not, so to say, necessary to engage in social conversations. And this is a particular situation. It is not a normal situation in most countries. Okay, so basically there was a situation whereby even scientifically we could actually study the effects of having input which was coming from a means of communication like television, which is unidirectional, so which basically only allows the person on the other end to listen, but not necessarily to interact. Okay? And one of the main conditions, so to say, in language learning is that besides listening a language in order to learn a language correctly, it is normally stated that we need interaction and negotiation. Now, when you have got a means of communication like television, this is obviously not the case, because you are listening, but you are not being given the opportunity to intervene, to interact, to negotiate, to stop the person who's speaking if you do not understand. Your only weapon, so to say, let's call it this way, is the telecommandos, the remote control, whereby obviously you can change channel, and that is obviously quite a weapon in actual fact, if you consider it, because obviously motivation is highly important. And very often, that is why many people here in Malta learned a language or learned Italian, because obviously they could choose to watch what they enjoyed watching. Okay, so this is just the introduction. Now, If we had to, you know, go a little bit more into some technicalities, first of all, what exactly is the role and the status of Italian in Malta? This is a question, okay? And has always been a question, an actual fact. Now, in linguistics, very often we speak of a second language, okay? In linguistics, very often, what is an L2 is basically a language which is learned after a native language. The distinction is very clear. In linguistics, a first language, a native language, is a language which is learned before 3 years of age, okay? It is a language which basically is a first language, therefore involves certain psychological mechanisms. A second language is a language which is learned after that. So, in linguistics, scientifically, you would speak of Italian as a second language in Malta, just as much as you'd speak of English as a second language in Malta. So, but that is a scientific definition, okay? Very often, obviously, Italian was defined as a third language, Italian, English, and Italian, and still is normally defined as a third language in Malta. Then again, even this is questionable. Definitely, for example, in the 80s, and research clearly shows this, there were a number of students, for example, who were more fluent in Italian than they were in English. Okay? So does that mean that Italian, in that case, would be a second rather than a third language? Obviously, the number of individual differences, especially at the time, were great. They still exist today. Because sometimes when I speak to university students, I realize, especially students obviously taking Italian, that their competence in Italian, and they themselves sometimes admit it, okay, and sometimes I even notice it, unfortunately, when they write emails to me in English, but that's another issue, okay, that their competence in Italian is better. So the huge individual differences lead us to speak of an L2 or a second language. But this is a technical definition. Now, learning a language through television, how effective is this? Okay, television exposes us to a language. It helps us understand a language, but does a person who is exposed regularly through a language by means of television also learn how to speak? If he is not or she is not given the opportunity to interact, as we said before, or to negotiate, this is a question mark. And very often, in the field of second language acquisition, okay, that is, in the scientific field, in the linguistic field, so to say, where, so to say, teaching and learning languages are studied, this is normally not accepted. I'm just quoting Susan Gus, who's one of the most renowned, okay, researchers in second language acquisition. In 1997, for example, she stated, television learning without an aid in associating meaning and structure is not sufficient for language learning. Some assistance needs to be given to children in order for them to begin to crack the code of the language being learned. And this is normally the position you would find in second language acquisition, that is, in the field of linguistics, which deals with teaching and learning languages. Normally, they would say, no, learning a language through television is not possible. One may learn how to understand, but will not learn how to speak. Okay? There are volumes, which are this thick, on second language acquisition, okay, in which they give examples of the way languages can be learned in a huge number of contexts. Normally, television is not even mentioned as a source by means of which a person can be exposed to a language and learn a language. And this, to me, is questionable and remains questionable. And as part of my research, sincerely, I mean, I've been striving also to introduce the idea that this is not a situation which is only limited to Malta. I mean, just on the side, let us keep in mind that, for example, in certain northern countries, in certain northern European countries, in Belgium, in Holland, in Sweden, for example, okay, they do not dub films. They do not translate television programs. They use subtitles. Is it just by chance that in these countries the level of English is so high? When you hear a Dutch person speaking in English, when you hear a Swedish person speaking in English, you will notice that they speak English. Obviously, I'm generalizing here, but they speak English very well. One of the reasons is also possibly, and research is being carried out on this now, one of the reasons is also possibly because they have constant exposure to English through television, which is just subtitled and not dubbed, not translated. So this is our context, and it is interesting. And it is, in a certain way, innovative. So basically, this is what one of the issues which I considered in my research. Now, when we speak about some further linguistic considerations, we also need to ask ourselves, what does it actually mean? What does it actually mean to know a language? What does it actually mean to learn a language? And these are three fundamental stages, okay? Very often we speak about input, okay? That is the language that is thrown your way. Intake. Intake is what we understand. Obviously, if you are watching a television program or if you are listening to somebody speaking in a foreign language, or in an L2, as we say, you don't necessarily understand everything. You might understand bits and pieces. That is your intake. And your output is what you actually can produce. So these are three fundamental stages. And these are normally considered to be the three stages whereby a person can be considered to be competent in an L2, competent in Italian, in French, in German, etc. Krashin, who is again quite a famous theorist, who however has the problem of being always right, or at least thinking that he's always right, where it's not the case, and sometimes he's not one of the problems. Krashin is very much quoted in our field. Very often he's overquoted. He's overquoted. But this is, for example, one of his concepts. He speaks about comprehensible input. He says that input, in order to be effective, must be comprehensible. So, in our classroom, if I am facing a class of children and I am speaking to them in Italian, I must make my Italian understandable to them. Okay? That is one of his principles. It can be debated, it can be contested, but it is one of the principles which normally is taken to be correct in second language acquisition. Now, television is comprehensible input par excellence. Why? Because besides the linguistic element, besides the language in itself, obviously, very often you have the visual element, and the visual element obviously accompanies the words themselves. Sometimes, as you know, even the visual element in itself is enough to communicate. No, a great deal of communication, in fact, occurs not by means of words, but by means of the visual element. Now, in television, what is basically the great advantage? That you have got the words, and you have got, you know, somebody who is basically acting out those words. For example, very often, when we speak about learning a language through television, very often, the linguistic variety, the language variety, which is normally more conducive to language learning, is what we will call, the BA students will feel butterflies in their stomach when I mention this, is what is called the parlato-recitato variety. The parlato-recitato variety, they just had their exam on this, the parlato-recitato variety is the form which is normally used in films and telefilms. Why? Because obviously it's a very different variety to, for example, the variety of, for example, the news. Because while somebody is actually acting out something, he is saying, he is accompanying by words what he is doing. No, in a film or in a teleserial. And not by chance, in the 80s, the most popular forms of television programs were very often these sort of teleserials or cartoons. A number of them were also dubbed, were American cartoons or American, for example, teleseries translated into Italian. Even because dubbing, another element here, even because dubbing, translating, normally simplifies and standardizes the form of language used. But we'll not go too much into detail on this. Now, research carried out locally, therefore, and I will come to this also by means of a graphic representation, research carried out locally indicates clearly that subjects who watch television regularly comprehend the language well. This has been something which has been proved in the early 80s here in Malta. A number of dissertations have been carried out, mainly through the work of Professor Joe Brincat of the Faculty of Arts, Head of Department of the Faculty of Arts, and this was extremely clear. Scientifically, using statistical significance, it was clear. Subjects who watch television, Italian television, comprehend the language. I'm not saying speak, it's a passive, therefore, competence. Comprehend the language well, even in the absence of formal instruction. Therefore, students who used to watch television regularly, despite not taking Italian at school, used to normally comprehend the language well. That is a fact, and this has been something which has been proved a number of years back. Now, does this also mean, the question that I asked is this, does this also mean that they can also speak fluently in Italian? Comprehending a language does not necessarily, let me repeat, okay, mean speaking the language, and this is the issue which is involved. Now, another question also arises from this. When we speak, all right, or when we use the term can they speak a language? What do we actually mean? What do we actually mean? If you just barely can communicate, is that speaking a language or not? Okay? Are there criteria which are used in order to speak a language? And the answer to this, in actual fact, is yes, there are criteria which are used. And these are criteria which we call acquisitional sequences. Now, we know, okay, that languages do not fall from the sky. In order to reach a certain amount of competence in a language, it is absolutely necessary to proceed through a number of stages, okay? What is normally called an interlanguage, okay? So a student in a classroom learning Italian, learning French, learning English in many cases, has to proceed through a number of stages. During these stages, the student will make mistakes, will make errors. The idea of making errors is an idea which is, or a concept, let's put it this way, which is second nature to language learning. To learn a language, a student must make mistakes. It is wrong when I sometimes go into schools, with all due respect, on teaching practice, and teachers who have been teaching in schools tell me things like, I can't teach them Italian, these children know nothing. What do you mean? You are meant to teach them Italian even though they know nothing. That is the job of a teacher. We cannot take for granted anymore the fact that because students once upon a time used to watch television, it is still the case today. Okay? So basically, even for example, the fact, a comment for example, I'm going to say this in Maltese, most of you answer, Iva laqqas il-kelma pioggia ma jifhem. Not even the word pioggia, they understand. Okay, pioggia, but why should a student learn pioggia? Or understand the word pioggia out of the blues, okay? It is obvious that very often we have to also understand that many of our teachers are taking a point of view which nowadays is not necessarily the case anymore. Is not necessarily the case anymore. And let me repeat, acquisitional sequences and the way we learn languages is very often conditioned by a number of mistakes. Don't be surprised if your students, I say this obviously to my BS students, if your students, for example, write a sentence in Italian, and in the middle of the sentence there'll be a word, for example, which is Maltese, or in Maltese, or like Maltese, any teacher here has experienced this, okay? But it is the way that we learn languages. This is the way that we learn languages. Now, when we speak about acquisitional sequences, let us take the verbs, some very, very simple examples. We know that, for example, the present, okay, in Italian, is learned before the passato prossimo and is learned before the imperfetto. This is what we call a hierarchy. It is a hierarchy. They are regular steps. Okay? They are regular steps. A person, whether he or she is learning Italian at school, or whether he or she is learning Italian through the television, or whether he or she is, for example, an immigrant who arrives in Italy, okay, and will learn the language spontaneously, will go through the same stages. They will go through the same stages, okay? This has been proved now for many languages by a huge amount of research. Now, in Italian, the three basic stages for the verbs are the following. The present, the passato prossimo, the imperfetto. You've got the verbs in brackets. So, I speak, I have spoken, and I was speaking, basically. It would be the very fair translation of that. Notice that in Italian, when we speak about the past tense, okay, the passato prossimo, this is a complex verbal form made up of an auxiliary, the verbo o, and a past participle, which is parlato. Now, it is important to know that one of the most common errors, for example, in languages like Italian and French, is the use of the auxiliary. Very often, even in MATSEC papers, you will get students who write, for example, io ho andato. It's very normal, or io ho partito. Why does that occur? That occurs, that is why auxiliary is within brackets there, that occurs because, in actual fact, the auxiliary is what is normally called an empty word. Why an empty word? Because the past tense itself is conveyed by means of the past participle. So if I am saying, io andato, that andato already means that I'm doing something in the past. The auxiliary in itself does not convey the past tense meaning, and that is one of the reasons why, okay, very often, immigrants in Italy, okay, we'll use terms like, for example, io parlato con, and we'll omit the auxiliary completely, okay? And again, these are normal errors. They are a normal way of learning a language, okay? There's also an acquisitional sequence for negation, so you would get these sort of forms, okay? So in Italian, you would get forms like, for example, io no parlo, all right? O io ragazzo no, okay? Which will go on in that way. It also exists for the pronouns, okay? So direct pronouns like lo precede indirect pronouns like gli. It also exists for the syntax. We know that coordination using conjunctions like e and ma precedes subordination. So simple sentences, let's put it this way, in a simple way, will precede more complex sentences. This is obvious, but again, within subordination, first of all, the first subordinate form to appear will be perché, followed by quando, followed by se. There are specific conditions. We have tools to be able to actually say whether a person can speak Italian at a certain level or not. And these stages are followed very regularly. Okay? Now, in my research, I used basically these stages. Okay? And I carried out a test, of which I will show you the result, in which I asked, this happened, I'd like to be clear about this. I collected my data quite some years back. So, data was collected in the late 90s, in 1999 to be precise. Okay? And you will notice that the results which I'm going to show you now are going to be different from the results that I'll be showing you in 5 minutes' time. Okay? Now, I asked a number of students who were taking Italian and a number of students who were not taking Italian in our local schools to narrate a short film. All right? So they were actually asked to speak in Italian. After they narrated this short film, I basically evaluated their language competence. What was the result? Okay? Now, you will notice that according to their daily exposure to Italian television, students who used to watch more than 3 hours of television a day, okay, fared much better, whether they were learning Italian at school or not. So, in actual fact, there were no significant differences between students learning Italian at school and students who were not learning Italian at schools. The significant differences emerged here. Students who watched television regularly, 87% of them basically, were above threshold level, we call it. They were therefore capable of speaking Italian without much difficulty. Students who used to watch very little television, despite in certain cases, learning Italian at school, still had major problems to speak in Italian. Okay? So this showed that in Malta, the influence of television, of Italian television, is not only limited to comprehension. Television can also lead to speak a language correctly when asked to do so. Okay? When asked to do so. Now, obviously, there are a number of typological constraints here. What do I mean? This happened for Italian in Malta. Keep in mind, okay, that Italian in Malta has certain similarities. First of all, there are many Maltese terms which derive from Italian. Secondly, we are very close culturally. Obviously, this helps, okay? This does not necessarily mean that if I'm going to put one of you students in front of Chinese television for a number of years, you will start speaking Chinese, okay? It does not mean that. Why? Because Chinese and Maltese typologically, that is, as languages, are distant, okay? The Chinese context, obviously I'm going on to the absurd here, the Chinese context is far from us, distant from us, so it is not a transferable result in all contexts, but it is a result nonetheless, and it is a significant result. In fact, there are the statistical significance numbers underneath. Okay, very briefly, okay? This is the way, all right? I'm not going to read this because there are other things to say. This is the way, for example, students who never learned Italian at school narrated a film. If you had to compare, for example, the way they spoke, okay, to me, with the criteria I showed you before in the acquisitional sequences, you will notice that they are very advanced. Okay, so Charlie Chaplin, è andato, past tense, a trovare un lavoro, all right, in una, that's a self-correction, un posto che fanno, che riparano delle navi, e Charlie Chaplin doveva trovare un pezzo di legname, this is obviously the classic case of transfer from Maltese, legname, per usare, e c'era un pezzo di legname che stava reggendo, etc. It's complex. May I repeat? AS means apprendente spontaneo. This is the way, at the time, let me repeat, students who never learned Italian at school were capable of speaking after regular exposure to the language through television. Basically, you will also get, for example, something like this AU, which is a very nice discourse marker, okay, in Maltese, but it's typical, that is typical. Discourse markers, you know, those words that we use at the edges, tend to be very often subject of code switching. Very often, even when we're speaking in English, it's very easy for us to say issa, mela. For example, an Erasmus student last year once had raised her hand, and she told me, obviously we carry out lectures in Italian, you know, she told me, just one thing, can you tell me what the word issa means? Because despite lecturing in Italian, you know, you go on saying issa, issa, issa. Now, let's come to today. What do the Broadcasting Authority survey show us? This impact of television has been significant. Is it still the case today? The answer is no, it is not. Now, I will tell you why I stopped at 2003. Now, in 1995, 12 years ago, all right, the exposure of, these are global figures, the exposure to Italian was as high as 51%, to local 39%, to other at 10%. Okay? Therefore, Italian held what we'd call today in political terms an absolute majority. In the space of 4 years, between 1995 and 1999, the reasons are obvious. You all know them if you live here. I mean, it's obviously cable television mainly, but not only, to be clear. It is not only cable television and the choice. It is also, Joseph Grima should know this because he's doing a thesis about it, the fact that very often, in actual fact, the exposure to television has lessened considerably, especially among youngsters. Nowadays, because of the computer, because of chat, all right, because of chatting, and because of other reasons, obviously DVDs, for example, or renting videos, television in itself, globally, has decreased. But, of course, in the space, look, of 4 years, from 51% of share, let's use an Italian term, okay, Italian went down to 27, and went down to 25 and to 22 in the years following that. The amount of local exposure to local channels has increased. In fact, this is maybe one of the things that, in a way, let me use the term worries me. Not really worries, but because it's inevitable, because I believe that at the end of the day, languages are something which we cannot really control. But in this country, I don't mean to sound alarmist, but in this country, we are experiencing what we can term as language loss. Language loss. For the simple reason that we have lost exposure to a language, to Italian. And it's not like this exposure has gone, for example, onto English. If, you know, the exposure to Italian had been, so to say, had led to then an improvement of the standards in English, I would say well and good. But it's not the case. It is not the case. Very often, and I have heard this in other circles, and it's also an impression that I have, okay, in certain cases, there are a number of people here in Malta who do not express themselves correctly, let's use the term correctly, neither in English nor in Maltese. Sometimes we are approaching cases of what is called semilingualism, which is a case which has been experienced in certain areas in the north of Europe. And this is not, it's not something that should be underrated, especially in local schools. We are definitely, I'm convinced of this, I am not speaking, you know, just off the top of my head, we have definitely experienced over the last few years a case of language loss here in Malta. And it's not something that we can just take lying down sometimes, even though it is very difficult to counteract. It is difficult to counteract. Now, why did I stop at 2003? For a very, very simple reason. The way the Broadcasting Authority surveys were being done till 2003 was, according to me, scientific and was correct and was representative. The way the surveys, I don't mean to criticize here the Broadcasting Authority, but the way the surveys are being carried out over the past 3 years is different, and according to me, results, I take my responsibility for this, are not reliable. Are not reliable. Okay? In these years, basically, the way the surveys used to be carried out was using what we call in Italian fasce orarie. No? So basically, they would check the popularity of channels in the morning, early afternoon, in the afternoon, in the evenings. Nowadays, the way they are being carried out is just by simply asking people, which is your favorite channel? All right? Results are not, if you ask me, reliable. For example, if I had to be totally honest, I could have here presented you triumphalistic figures. For example, between 2005 and 2006, according to the surveys done by the Broadcasting Authority, the exposure to Italian has gone up to almost 40%. I'm sorry, research which I myself have done, which my students have done, and which we are doing at university, does not come anywhere near those figures. We are in a range still of 22 to 25% at the most. Definitely not 40%. Definitely not 40%. I don't know. I believe that there is something wrong. That is why I'm not quoting figures of the Broadcasting Authority from 2004 onwards. Now, the SEC examination, more figures. Now here we can go to 2006. Now, if we had to take a percentage, all right, of the total of students who actually sit for the exam in Italian, a percentage of the total of students. In 1995, 50% of the total of students sat for the SEC examination in Italian. In 2006, 10 years, 11 years later, the figure is down to 34%. As a total, we have decreased to 16%. English, now, in 1995 was at 45%, but the reason for that was because at the time, many students also used to opt to do the exam in foreign boards, okay, the London examination. But English, for example, I used English just as a comparison. Steadily, for example, keeps above 70%. The percentage of Italian has gone down, okay? The percentage of Italian has gone down. The number of students, I'm not speaking as a raw figure, as a raw score, but if we take it as a percentage of the total of students actually sitting for the math test, has gone down. And there are many reasons for this. Now, this is something you'd love to see. Now, this is a typical, and I'm not exaggerating, this is a typical paper 2B, okay, composition in Italian. Composition in Italian. I'm going to read it for you, all right? And while I'm reading it, I think it's important to actually listen to see how it actually sounds. I hope most of you understand Italian, but in any case, I'll go through it. Ciao, come stai, Luca? Hai un grande problema. Okay, the title, incidentally, was basically you have observed a friend who has done something wrong and you're going to give him advice how to get out of trouble. That is basically what he's writing about. Ciao, Tayeb. Come stai, Luca? Hai un grande problema. Sai quel vecchio che abita vicino a casa mia ha detto che tu l'ultima settimana hai rotto qualche cabina telefonica che sta davanti a casa mia. Ha detto come ti ha visto dalla finestra del soggiorno alle 9 di sera. Quando ha detto questo, io lì ho detto che si era sbagliato e che tu a quell'ora stavi a casa a guardare la televisione. Mia madre, quando ha sentito questo, ha detto che tu non sei un teppista. Lui si è arrabbiato e se n'è rientrato dentro casa sua. Se io fossi in te, manderei mia madre a dirgli che in quell'ora eri a casa tua. Ma non ti consiglio di chiedere un parere a tua madre. Posso fare qualcos'altro? Eccetera. Notice the difference between the way the student actually writes, okay, the way the student writes, okay, and the fact that despite expressing himself correctly in the language, has absolutely no sense of text organization, of paragraphs, of punctuation, of capitals. Now, this is why, even at university, I insist very much on what we call learning strategies or teaching strategies. It is important. It is important when we are teaching Italian, but when we are teaching any subject, to actually teach students these basic rules, which regard writing as a skill in itself. Okay? That is why I insist on this with teachers, because in actual fact, when we are actually teaching Italian, it is important to keep in mind that we are teaching a language, it's true, but we are also teaching certain strategies which can be useful for a student even when he or she is writing in another language. Okay? So, this is just an example. But let me repeat, it is not one example. We get a number of papers of this type for the SEC examination. Okay, my conclusions. So, first of all, the situation in Malta clearly shows that television can be conducive to learning languages. That is a fact. It is a fact. And despite the fact that this is an issue which very often has not been tackled in the field of second language acquisition, I think that here in Malta we have enough proof now to state it boldly, to speak obviously about the fact that at the end of the day we are speaking about Italian in Malta, but television and the media are conducive to learning languages. That's the first thing. Input from television has decreased. And unsurprisingly, so has the popularity of Italian in our schools. It is a situation which we must face. It is a situation which we must consider. All right? Not only from the schools, I continue insisting on the importance of not students at Form 4 and Form 5 level. That is much too late. Sometimes it's, keep in mind, please, that language learning is effective when we are very young, even before the age of 11, in actual fact. Even before the age of 11, we start already learning a second language, Italian in this case, in our case, quite late. Okay? The importance of Form 1 classes and Form 2 classes is crucial. The idea of leaving the so-called more enterprising teachers, let me put it that way, to the Form 4s and 5 is completely mistaken, I'm afraid. Because if a student does not gain awareness, all right, and does not learn how to appreciate a language when he or she is in Form 1 and in Form 2, forget it. In Form 3, it's too late. Teachers and examiners. It's also an issue which has to be faced by examiners. Are faced with an important challenge, making the subject attractive and useful. Okay? We must also keep in mind that when we speak about Italian, and we spoke about the SEC examination before, there are major, major differences between the SEC examination of Italian and the SEC examination of other foreign languages. The SEC examination, the level of texts, for example, in Italian, is much higher. It's much higher. Okay? This is something which we, at the moment, we are going to also start researching, thanks to one of our students. But it is an issue. There needs to be some form of standardization. I'm not saying let us take the lowest common denominator. German is considered to be the language which is most distant from us. So let us use German as our basic level in order to test our students. That is not the case. You have to also consider a history of a language and the context in which it actually evolved and it's actually being used. But it is a fact that there are major discrepancies. Having an O-level certificate in Italian and having an O-level certificate in another foreign language in Malta does not mean that you possess the same amount of competence in the language. There are differences. It's a fact, and I think it is something we have to consider. Finally, within this context, it is essential that within our schools, we find a balance between what is communicative and what is grammatical. Okay? What is formal. It is extremely important, obviously, to use a communicative approach, but at the same time, please note that the communicative approach does not mean discarding grammar and does not mean discarding completely the basic rules of writing. We have two realities which we have to face, okay, and which we have to deal with. In 5 years, there is time to do so. In 5 years, there is time to do so. It is extremely important at the end of the day to keep in mind that we teach languages to communicate. That is basic at O level. But I stress that when, even at university, we speak about a task-based model of learning or the communicative approach, that does not mean brushing aside what is formal, what is grammatical. Because sometimes the impression I get is that we teach communicatively, so let's throw grammar out of the window. It is absolutely not the case, and it is not right. There are two realities. The important thing is putting them both together, okay, so that by the end of Form 5, a student can comprehend the language, can speak the language as much as we are expecting him or her to speak at SEC level, if he or she is going to actually take the SEC examination, and the basic grammatical, morphological, especially rules, are there, and they obviously have to be acquired. So, the Italian job, yes. We have been through a number of upheavals, but I think that the role of a teacher of Italian today is much more challenging than it was in the past. Obviously, being much more challenging, it entails more responsibilities, and it is also more demanding. That is true. I wholly believe that we should introduce more technology in our Italian classrooms. I continue insisting on the use of television in the classroom, and unfortunately, I see it being used very rarely. There are obviously practical constraints. I'm not going to go into that now. It is important also to use computers in our classrooms, if we can. I encourage very much my students, for example, to teach writing also occasionally by taking students to the language lab, and instead of giving them an essay to write, for example, at home, if they have the accessibility, no, by hand, to also do so by using the skills which they acquire in their computer lesson. So putting the two things together. We can't lag behind, okay? Technology is part of our lives, and it also has to be part of language teaching today, in this day and age. Okay? It is not just a matter of a textbook and teaching. That is the only way we can also slowly bring the language up to a par and help it again regain a status which I believe that unless there is some form of direct intervention, it will continue to lose, without meaning to sound excessively pessimistic, to conclude.
Thank you, Dr. Caruana, for your presentation. As a non-lingivist, I found your presentation not only stimulating, but also revealing. Mm-hmm. We have 10 minutes for questions, statements. Any volunteers?
As a result of what you have said just now regarding the impact of television on some students, very often I find myself at a disadvantage when compared to a teacher who teaches German or French. Yeah. And let me tell you why. You can really feel that in the same class you will find a lot of mixed abilities.
Yes, definitely.
That is, students who watch Italian television and they know how to speak Italian very well as from the first year, as from 4-1.
Yes, yes, definitely.
And students who don't know anything, even at Form 3. So how do you think that we can face this situation in the best way when you have a class with such mixed abilities? Yes. How can we face it?
That is definitely a major issue for Lisanne. I mean, you're absolutely right. It is something which I didn't mention, but you're absolutely right. Yes, there's a great deal of differentiation in our classrooms. That is true. In Form 1, you are faced, okay, with students who have sometimes even a high level of competence in the language and others who have to start from scratch. Okay? Now, obviously, the only way, quite frankly, that, I mean, just very briefly, obviously, it's a very complex issue, is even the work itself in certain cases has to be differentiated. It requires definitely, it's more of a responsibility and more of a task on the teacher herself in this case. Okay? That is, I believe very much, and again, I also mentioned this so much, in cosiddetti materiali di scorta. That is, a teacher of Italian must be equipped, okay, with certain materials. So you obviously have to, if you're going to face a class, you obviously have to take more or less at least the level of the mean, if not slightly below the mean of that class. But if you've got students who are highly competent, okay, it would be useful to try and give them some additional material, which could be something to read, it could be a magazine, it could be, but somehow they have to be addressed, even the better students. But yes, it is a problem. But I think the only key in order to solve this problem, obviously, unless certain schools, for example, nowadays are adopting setting, but that is another issue, which again has its problems and can be a solution in some ways and create problems in others. In mixed ability classes, and this occurs also generally at primary level, the only way is to have a more individual approach and from the side of the teacher, okay, to equip himself or herself better to be able to especially cater for the needs of those students who are better, all right, by giving them additional material while you are addressing the needs of the weaker ones. Okay? Clearly, in a class which is large, in a 30-student class, I myself am the first to state that it is an extremely difficult situation. Okay? Mixed ability ideally should not exceed 15 students, a mixed ability class, 15, 20, if you want to really obtain, you know, good results, I would say, in language learning. I speak about language learning here. I'm not speaking about maths or science, that's not my subject. Okay, but definitely it is a situation which basically, especially if the class is numerous, requires the teacher to be more prepared. There's no other way about it, I'm afraid. Mari?
You showed us some statistics. You said 70% are choosing Italian, sat for the SEC exam.
Yes.
And the number seems to be going down.
Yes.
But I was wondering, sort of, is the level of competency going down in the SEC exams? I mean, if only 70% choose it, it doesn't matter. I mean, today there's French, which has become very popular. German is being offered. So it wouldn't worry me so much that less are sitting for it. But, you know, are they doing better? Is the standard remain the same?
That's $1 million question, Mari. It's as simple as that. If you ask me, and if you had to compare the level of today with the level of, 10 years back, I would say undoubtedly yes. The level probably has gone down. Okay? But it is extremely difficult to generalize. It's extremely difficult to generalize. Okay? As I said, if you actually had to compare raw figures, the number has not actually gone down much over the past years doing in the actual SEC examination. Now, whether the competence of students has decreased or not, I mean, if we use the curve of standard, the normal curve of standard deviation. So to say, it's basically always the same. You know, you get the cluster in the middle, the brilliant ones at one end, and the weaker ones at another end. So I wouldn't say that, at least, I'm speaking a little bit on top of my head, I must say, that, you know, competence has actually gone down drastically. Definitely, as far as the influence of television is concerned, I think that has reflected, I would say, a slight lessening, so to say, diminishing in the levels of competence. That probably is, but not significantly, I would say, not hugely significantly. Let me put it this way.
Allora, popularity has decreased. That was one of the statements you said. In 2005.
Wait. Popularity has decreased. Let me. I quoted figures regarding the SEC examination.
Yes,
basically. Okay.
I have to quote figures of students at our schools.
Yes.
State schools. In 2005, there were 500 less students in government schools. Again, 500 plus less students in 2006. In each year, there was nearly 1% extra taking Italian each year. It might be that it's less popular in private or church schools because some church schools lately have decided to give just one language to their students.
Yes.
And you know that the good students don't take Italian because it's too easy. It's a waste of time. I do it privately, and then we start having attacks on our syllabus. Standardization exercise, something you called for, and with which we all agree. Just to inform the platea, and that I have been, as a syllabus panel chairperson, I was involved last year for nearly 9 months in an exercise which involved all the syllabus chairpersons, in an exercise to standardize as much as possible, because as you said, it would be absurd to pretend from Italian the same level that one would expect from Arabic, Russian, or German. But we worked together, and the 2010 syllabus should reflect an exercise taken together under the chairpersonship of Dr. Riffa, which shall aim at trying to bring as possibly near the foreign languages. We took as a standard B1, say B1 plus of the Common European Framework of Reference, and we have found a number of compromises. For example, the weightings given to the different skills which are tested in each. And I'm very proud to say that these languages are going to have the same standardized, the same weightings which our language has had for many years. Each skill will be given a valid weighting. Say, for example, 15% in speaking, 15% in, you know it. Just for information's sake.
No, definitely. On the second point, I mean, as far at least as, evaluation purposes, like I said, I know that the MATSEC is at least concerned, let me use the term concerned, about the SEC is actually concerned about this, you know, standardization issue. I wish to see something more concrete, with all due respect to everybody. I'm not speaking to you, obviously, Tom, but in general, okay, in terms of standardization. That's one thing. In terms of popularity, with all due respect, the fact that the same number of students take the language at schools is definitely a fact. What still is not consoling enough to me is basically the reaction I see and basically the competence that sometimes I see in certain classes, especially when I'm out on teaching practice, which I think very often is also reflected in the fact that despite the fact that it's true in state schools, okay, the number of students taking Italian has remained unaltered, the number of students then who actually at the end of 5 years come out with something, you know, which can actually state, look, I've got a qualification in the subject, has still lessened considerably. That is what is also concerning to me. Because, obviously, take maths. 100% of the students take maths in our state schools. Is that enough to say that, okay, everything is fine? No, for me it's not. And I think very often when we quote figures in schools and we say, for example, 75% of students in Malta take Italian. I quote that abroad myself. Sometimes I see it a little bit as a smoke screen. To me, it is not enough. It is not enough. And again, the reality is also very different. Yes, as you said and you mentioned briefly yourself, for many other reasons, in church schools and especially in independent schools, where, for various reasons, as Mari mentioned before, okay, students do not consider Italian anymore, as you said, to be easy, Tone, at all. They consider Italian very often to be difficult and will opt for French because they will say, I will take, this is a known fact, I'm not saying, they will take French because they will say the O level of French is easier. Okay? This is a fact, and I think it reflects on considerations that we should make about the subject. That's,
I should like to think that the applause you have received just now, and it does not mean that people are out after a certificate, rather which is a piece of paper which opens your way to the sixth form, and not a piece of paper which says that you have really learned something. I mean, a meaningful certificate. I would like to endorse what both you and Tony said about not having the same level for French and German. Because it is easy to say that the passages in French and German for the listening or for the reading comprehension are more difficult. But then, I think we have always believed that Italian here enjoys a special status with reference to the East. Not only do we have a history of Italian in Malta, but we have a language which is 50%, our vocabulary is 50% Romance, and which is easily, immediately understandable. How can we compare this to French and German? Are we going to take no account of this fact? One final thing, because it is late. I would like all here present to keep in mind that bringing down the level of SEC, as I am understanding this, what is being done vis-a-vis leveling the differences between the languages will entail, bringing down the level of SEC will entail the bringing down the level of the of advanced level. If we bring down the advance of the ed level, we bring down the level of the BA and the BA degree. That's why I'm so very wary of clipping and pruning the syllabus. I can say that some people say that our syllabus is much too vast, but I would like to ask anyone to tell me what has increased in the syllabus. It has never been overloaded. In the last 20 years, it is always the same. I think what has decreased is the actual testing of certain things, because as you will notice, practically some sentences have been eliminated, have disappeared from the examination paper, or else they are being tested for recognition, and that's all, or else their weighting is minimal in the examination paper. So I think what is really the crux is the difficulty of teaching Italian in a new scenario. What you said, and that the teachers of Italian now will have to equip themselves much better methodologically. Mm-hmm. I think that is the real crux of the question.
No, definitely I agree, Joe, with your points. Just a couple of brief things. Let's be careful about actually saying 50% of words in Maltese derive from Italian. Again, it's a fact, but be careful, because we are not speaking there. You're speaking about raw words, not about the frequency of use. When you actually take into account the frequency of use of the Italian words themselves is much, much less than 50%. Because let's keep in mind that in Maltese, most invariable terms, conjunctions, pronouns, prepositions, are all Semitic. So, okay, in our dictionaries, you will find 50% of the words deriving from Italian. But their use in daily language is not 50% of the use or frequency of use. And that is a significant difference. Secondly, okay, I agree, clipping down And let me repeat, I'm not here to state let's clip down this or let's remove this from the syllabus. I think you summarized very well what I said in your last sentence. It is teaching a language in a new scenario, which is important. However, again, as regards your point, well, okay, clipping down the O level, we'll clip down the A level, we'll clip down the BA, we'll clip down the BEd, we'll clip down everything. Unfortunately, but the fact remains, I taught at junior college for 10 years and now I've been teaching at university for a number of years too, that despite the fact that the level of an examination in a language tends to be high or maybe high, the number of errors that you get, especially in written language, still tend to be the same basic errors. For example, articles, preposizioni articolate, something that you should do in Form 1 and in Form 2. Despite the fact that the O-level is what it is, you will go into sixth form students who have got a 2 and a 3 in the O-level, and they still will have problems with that. That is an issue, again, which sometimes, I believe, is not necessarily determined also then by the examination itself. But that is another major issue. But it's easier said than done. Yes?
What if I had to compare the percentage passes in Italian, French, German, and Spanish?
Sharon, I won't answer your question because I don't have figures at hand.
But is there anybody who has ever compared them?
Yes, of course. I don't have figures at hand. Okay, here, I can't, you know, just dish out figures and tell you, look, this amount. I believe, but I stand to be corrected with all due respect, that the percentage pass rate of French, I'm speaking about French, German I wouldn't know, is higher than Italian. Okay? No, it's higher than Italian. So whether it's significantly higher or not, but I don't wish to commit myself here, you know, but it is higher.
Yes, it is about 70%.
Yes, it's about 70%.
But what does it mean?
Yes, it could also be determined, by the way, but it is evaluated, huh? Because by saying students are more successful is a very generic term. My point is that it doesn't mean that a student who has got a qualification in French, okay, and a student who may not have a qualification in Italian, sometimes you'd get a student who does not have a qualification in Italian who might have the same level as a student of French who has a qualification in French. That is where there is the disparity.
Okay, the Italian job. You said the Italian job. I assume it's the Italian job for teachers and students.
And for lectures.
Whatever, and for lectures. So we are, if we all know the motivation for those who did the heist, and you know, it was the gold, finally, in the Italian job in the film. You mentioned the film, right? What should be the motivation for students and teachers to learn and teach Italian?
What should be the ultimate motivation?
Yes.
Well, obviously, that's, again, an extremely multifaceted question. Obviously, the main goal, I think, that we should aim for, basically, as teachers, as lecturers, is to equip students, first and foremost, okay, in schools, I'm saying, with something. I think SEC is part of it, Chris, with all due respect. I mean, especially students. I mean, the issue is that in local schools, definitely, okay, you have a high percentage of students who do not sit for the SEC. We have to cater for them too, okay? In that case, it is important to equip them. I believe very much, I said this during the lecture, okay, at the end of the day, if I tell my students, if you are going in a school just to be a teacher of Italian, your role is going to be extremely minimal. You're not going to be just a teacher of Italian. You have to be a teacher, first and foremost, of a language. And teaching certain issues in Italian, teaching how to organize a text, teaching how to address somebody, okay, all that is what we call notional functional, no, in our syllabus, can be applied to English, can be Maltese. So that is the first basic goal that I believe a language teacher should have, whether it is a teacher of a first language or a second language. First and foremost, teaching the basic strategies, okay? Teaching how to read, okay? Teaching how to skim, how to scan, how to write, the basic things. Those are the first basic goals. If you want language-specific goals, I do believe that, yes, we should give them the basic. A student who has had a course for 5 years, I believe, should have at least the basic vocabulary to be able to communicate. And hand in hand with this, yes, I believe there is also the qualification. At the end of the day, whether we like it or not, schooling is tied to evaluation in one way or another. So if at the end of 5 years of schooling, a student, okay, can have a piece of paper, call it what you like, can have a certificate, which can actually tell him or tell an employer that, look, I have got a grade 5, a grade 4 in Italian, yes, I believe it is significant. I believe it is important. We can't just isolate ourselves from a context in which we are living in. At the end of the day, certification has to have its role. So I believe that basically they are threefold. Teaching strategies, learning strategies, learning how to be autonomous, learning how to love the language. We're all here because we loved Italian. At some point in time, something struck, all right? And that is why, again, I always tell my students, please teach your students also the way you learned the language. Don't teach them a totally grammatical approach if you yourself, who love Italian today, used to hate it. I mean, come on, it's paradoxical in a way, that. Secondly, yes, the basic communication tool, languages are used to communicate, we need to give basic communicative tools. Yes, certification is part of it.
Can we get some of your students to do some research to see whether we are useful or not? We are talking about math, sex and things and others. Yeah. I go to restaurants and I have friends who are in the restaurant business. We send them people with O level, A level and whatever to work in the restaurant, and they can't communicate. The man, the owner of the restaurant, knows more Italian, and he's never been to school, and he's never learned it, and he speaks pidgin Italian, and yet he employs somebody with a big certificate who cannot communicate with the tourists, so they don't make business, they can't earn money. Okay. Can we get somebody to study whether we are useful in translations, in shops, guides, whether we know how to speak as guides, tour leaders? Are we being useful to industry? Are we making our mark? What the heck are we teaching? What the hell do we want professors like myself and yourself and all these professors around here? Let's try and be useful.
Yes, but wait a second. Now, this is another major issue. I don't agree totally with you here on this point because this is an argument. I mean, I don't believe that teaching and learning or whatever just has to be functional. I don't believe that university just has to serve the purpose of serving industry or serving. No, I don't believe in that. I mean, learning in itself or learning what is, yes, of course, learning in itself has a deep inherent value. I totally believe in that. If I didn't believe in that, I would be doing a different job. It is true that the market, the work market, requires us to be useful. It is obvious that nowadays we tend to be less useful than other professions. But in my case, especially when issues like that are raised, quite frankly, I feel I stand my ground. No, I'm not saying that I believe that we have to have a role in society to play, but I really believe that you have to also go beyond that. I mean, for example, an interesting point that you were raising before, originally, for example, is one of the things that sometimes is debated in linguistic circles is the teachability of languages. Is a language actually teachable, for example? Can we teach a language? The very notion of teaching a language sometimes is actually brought into contention. And it's not an insignificant question, but then usefulness it has many sides.
Yeah. Any more questions? Yes, one final question then.
I would just like to ask, perhaps one should look into the choice of books as well. I mean, my son had, I don't know if I can quote it.
Yeah,
the Queen Italian.
I haven't written myself, so I mean, I suppose.
But in this day and age, perhaps they could be more student, approachable,
Definitely.
What I mean?
So you're mentioning Queen Italian, which is a textbook which is completely outdated in this day and age. I believe that nowadays we are using a textbook in the States, which has been introduced recently, which is much more adequate for the days we are living in, which is Rete. And there's also Rete Junior. There's a book which, thanks to Mr. De Gabriel, has also been adapted. Now, obviously, textbooks have a vital role.
Yes.
To play.
No,
but
I
it's
mean,
not only textbooks. A textbook is just a tool at the end of the day.
But surely it helps. I mean, I can see my son.
Inevitably.
I can compare. My son did French and Italian.
Yes.
The French one, had pictures and,
yes,
it was
obviously
colorful. And this, what I mean?
But if he studied Italian on Qui Italia, with all due respect to the authors of the book,
I mean,
it's definitely an outdated approach.
Oh. Yes. And
in that specific book.
All I can say is he's got 12 O levels and he failed his Italian. But he got a 1 in maths.
Yes, but it would be interesting to see why he failed Italian. But believe me, his Italian, as Felicien said, we get the best students who get all their O-levels, as you are saying, but fail Italian. And then we get the worst students who fail all their O-levels, and maybe get a 2 or a 3 in Italian. That is why the Italian job, it's topsy-turvy.
My one regret was that he took paper 2A, because had he taken 2B, perhaps, but the thing is, I know.
Maybe
you
can ask for a revision of paper.
Sandro, you taught, you stimulated, and you provoked, and I thank you for all three of them. I would like to thank also all those who helped me in attracting such an audience, Dr. Caruana himself, Mr. De Gabriele. Okay, we tripled the audience in 1 year, and that is absolutely something. Thank you very much for being with us, and thank you once again, Dr. Caruana.
You have just listened to the second annual JMER lecture, The Italian Job, the Impact of Input from the Media on Language Learning. The lecture was delivered by Dr. Sandro Caruana.